5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, that's Tim Dennis. We're wrapping up another weekend here. It's gone by quick. I'm back out on the road again this next week, Tim. Would you like to know where we're going to be investigating next for the Holzer Files?
Yes, please.
Oh, if I told you, I'd lose my job. So stop taunting me that way, Tim. I can't talk.
I don't want you to lose your job.
Tim, you know the rules, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I'm...
You don't ask. I just tell when I'm ready, Tim.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No problem. Just don't let it happen again. Yeah, I'm back out on the road. Coronavirus be damned, Tim. They're just going to keep working us.
Interestingly enough, somebody asked me about that the other day with everything that's shutting down. Somebody asked me, well, are Dave and the crew still out there filming Holzer Files? I said, of course. They're going to run them into the ground until they get the thing.
That's right.
So, yeah, I just figured that was a given.
Our production's very smart, actually. We're doing our best to continue, especially that we're out here already filming. We've even offered as the cast, let's just keep going, you know, which will be rough on us not seeing our families. But instead of taking a week or two off between episodes, since we're already out here, if there's a way to just push up the line and try to knock it all out, mm-hmm. because as this thing progresses, I think it's just going to get worse before it gets better, to be honest.
Yeah.
With you.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I don't necessarily mean the disease, but I mean the virus. I mean the reaction for it. And yeah. What's going to be available and shut down and travel and everything. So we're trying to knock out as many episodes as we can. This next week, we're going to be filming episode 6 of the series. So I'm excited about that.
Cool.
I got to tell you, man, we've had some mind-blowing evidence this season. And I'm extremely excited to see how it's going. And I got to tell you, I'm positive Hans Holzer would be proud of the activity that we're getting. And the answers we're getting, you know, something to consider, Tim, when this guy was out there kind of breaking ground, mm-hmm. doing this research, you know, he was doing this 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. Just bear that in mind. Right.
Okay.
I mean, this year is his 100th birthday.
Wow.
This guy was out there doing it. And there, you know, you go off of the information that's given to you.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of instances, history, I don't know if you know this, Tim, history isn't always correct.
No.
And what we thought we knew about a story 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, oftentimes turns out to be misunderstood. And history has corrected itself over the years. And we've been finding that, not that Hans Holzer was incorrect, but that the information he was given was incorrect. And that's why he said these cases will never truly be closed, because there's always the evolution of information. And I'm gonna give a bit of information here, Tim, that might blow the minds of a large part of our audience.
Okay.
Google and online services didn't exist 60, 50, 40, and 30 years ago.
Why?
The internet, Tim?
Yeah.
Wasn't always around. No. We had phones that hung on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a cordless phone, it meant that your dad ripped it out of the wall because he was mad at you for being on it too long.
Okay.
Right?
You're right.
Many things have changed. Hans Holzer couldn't just get online and tap on and boom, find all the research other people had done on these specific stories. So it's really fascinating. And we're getting to those details now. And the history that we're investigating this year is really exciting to me. And I got to tell you, I'm a 52-year-old man. All right. And I'll admit full-heartedly, when I was in school, I was not into history.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I've become more of a history aficionado and enjoy it. But there are aspects of history. I'm going to drop one bomb on you that I just learned. Are you ready for this, Tim?
Sure.
The Emancipation Proclamation. Right?
Right.
You're familiar with that term?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
What did that tell people? What's the base? If you had to boil it down to one sentence, what was the Emancipation Proclamation?
If I had to boil it down, I would say the Emancipation Proclamation was... Sorry, as I dropped my iPad, would be well, everybody assumes that it was the freeing of the slaves.
Right.
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 Yeah.
And it was from the South.
From the South. Right.
It's not freeing the slaves from the North. Lincoln just hoped that the North, who he considered to be on his side, would just play along and let the slaves go.
Right.
But my... Yeah, one of the things they talked to us about at this current investigation is that he really had only released the slaves in the South. That's what it was about. Isn't that strange?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I mean, you know, why not just put a blanket statement in that all slaves are free? I don't know. It's crazy. It's interesting, fascinating information. But like I said, there's just little slivers of history that you read about. And it wasn't that he was trying to keep the North with slaves. He just, like you said, he hoped his constituents would back him and free this aspect of it. So really just those little bits, some of the other little intricacies of history that we've uncovered are really kind of interesting. And I hope they make the episodes because I think that's a great learning tool. You watch for the ghosts, you walk away enlightened and learn something new.
Very interesting indeed.
Unless we find out our historian was, you know, whacked out on meth or something when they told us that story, and it turns out that's not true. I don't know. You know, I'll have to go over the Emancipation Proclamation here in a little bit just to double check her findings. But that to me was pretty astounding. So I love finding all this great history, being in these haunted locations where history literally took place. Not just, oh, grandma's ghost is heard knocking around, but places where history. Last year, Morris Chumel Mansion, New York, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
This was George Washington's war room during the American Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
I stood where he stood, making much less wise decisions than George Washington, but wow. I stood there, Tim.
But that's very cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
And I get to share that with millions of viewers all around the world. Australia, welcome to the fold. I've seen now from many Australian listeners of the show that they're now watching the Holzer Files over in Australia.
That's cool, too.
So I'm hoping not illegally, but I'm guessing it made its way over to the TV. I know we have quite a few listeners over in the UK, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
If you are watching the Holzer Files and it has made its way to TV over there, let me know what channel you guys are on. We'll give it a shout out, but I'd like to hear from you. Dave@darknessradio.com. All right, let's get started with today's episode, Tim. Again, as we do this, we always get the opportunity to hear about new books coming out. There's a book coming out on April 21st, 2020. We have a link to it in today's program, so you'll be able to find this link. The Hairbrush and the Shoe. A True Ghost Story. Gene Stanton, our guest. Gene, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Dave.
This is, fascinating. I love when we get to talk to people, real people that have had experiences, not just authors that are telling us stories that happened years ago, but from somebody who literally had these experiences for themselves. Now, have you always had strange and supernatural things occur throughout your life?
No, at least not that I've been aware of. The hairbrush disappearance was the first incident that I experienced that was definitely out of the ordinary.
All right. Well, let's go back. I mean, can you kind of give us a setting for this story? First of all, can you tell us where this, what state does this take place in?
Well, this takes place in Massachusetts, in Boston. We live in an old 1875, they're called brownstones, although ours is brick. And we were the fourth family to have lived in it. So there was a lot of history in the building. And it is an older building with a lot of creaks and groans. But these were never regarded by any of us as evidence of the houses being what you would call haunted.
And how long had you lived in that home before strange things began to happen?
We had been there, I'd say, 2 years. 2 years before the first really specific, inexplicable incident happened.
If you don't mind, walk me through, I mean, finding that house. Was it a house like every other, or did it stand out to you? Did you feel almost like a calling to that house?
Oh, I did. Definitely felt a calling. It's an area of Boston called Back Bay. It's an historic neighborhood. Many, many beautiful buildings, almost all of which had been divided up into apartments over the years. And my husband and I had been living in an apartment. We'd had a child. We needed more room. We had an art collection. We needed wall space and so on. So I knew there were some, not many, houses in Back Bay that were still single family, and I started looking for them. And there turned out to be a total of 14 in the neighborhood, and it's a big neighborhood. So I went to one, and they took it off the market. And then I went into this house with a realtor and walked in. It was a very peculiar entrance. It was what's called a garden-level entrance, where you walk down and then come into a kind of vestibule. And it was very dark and kind of peculiar inside. And there was this curved stairway going up to the main floor. And so I followed the real estate person up these stairs and came out on a landing, which was bathed in light. There was a huge skylight at the top of the house. The place was dim, dusty, decrepit, but I knew instantly that that was the house we were going to buy. In fact, I called my husband later that day and said, "I just bought us a house. Do you want to come see it?" And he always tells that story and laughs, but I knew. I definitely knew.
And that house felt like home to you?
It did. It felt like home. It just had very gracious spaces, and the strange thing about that house compared to other houses, it had been remodeled, rebuilt inside in the early part of the 20th century in such a way that it had a curved inner staircase. Most of the houses in Back Bay are of the same design, where the staircase goes up the side and the rooms go off from the staircase. Because of the way this house had been reconfigured, sound traveled throughout. I could stand outside our bedroom door and hear what was going up on in my children's rooms in the next floor. It was like, even though the house is very large, you could feel all of it at once, hear everything that was going on all at once because of this openness in the center part of the house. And all of us, we all always have felt very comfortable in that house, and our friends love coming there as well.
Now, can you tell me, did they give you any indication of strange things happening? Was there any kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, well, you know, it's an old house, this might even be haunted kind of vibe when they sold this house to you?
No. In fact, what I was told, the house was very dark. An elderly couple lived there. They were in their early 80s and were being forced to move out by their children because they felt it wasn't safe for them to be in the house any longer. But the house was very dark, mainly because they had never taken down the blackout shades from the Second World War. Everyone on the East Coast, as I understood it, I grew up on the West Coast, so I hadn't been aware of this. You know, there was a, you know, blackout in case the Germans were going to fly over and drop bombs on the city. So they'd put up these shades, and there were fire extinguishers all around, and there was a sort of a chicken wire netting over the skylight in case glass broke. So there were all of these kinds of elements, which is what made the house kind of dark and creepy. But it was all about the war, not about any ghostly presence.
All right. Now, when your husband comes to view the house, does he feel the same attraction to it that you did?
He did. He didn't have the same kind of instantaneous romantic love that I did when I saw the spaces and the rooms and so on. But he did see a lot of wall space. We'd been collecting paintings, and it was at a time when paintings were very, very large. So that pleased him. The house also came with parking spaces in back of it, which is a real boon to anyone who lives in the city.
Now, you said you're there for about 2 years, and before mm-hmm. this first example happens, as you look back at it with 2020 hindsight, as we are in the year 2020, Jean, do you see yes. that there were other instances that you might have overlooked?
Absolutely. You know, because we all lose things. We all misplace things, and they turn up, and you say, oh, I must have whatever, and you go on about your business. We did live through the blizzard, and during the storm, the house made all kinds of noises. There were lots of bangings and creakings and groanings and doors slamming on the top floor. So those were sounds we attributed to the storm, to the wind and the snow. However, later on, I was awakened by this kind of dripping of a leak. And that was an almost surreal thing, because it forced me to get up in the middle of the night and go to the top floor. And I don't know how I even heard it, because we were sleeping on the second floor, and then this leak was up on the top fifth floor in the remote part of the building. And I went up, and as it turned out, water was pouring in. And so I had to, of course, run and get buckets and everything. But I later thought, you know, it was almost like the house was telling me, wake up, get up, run upstairs and take a look, because there's bad stuff going on. Now, that sounds fanciful, of course. But over the years, I have felt that there have been these sort of not so much warnings as just prompts that, you know, something's going on here. You should take a look at this. I kind of feel it.
And in those moments, it's like the house is speaking to you.
Yes, exactly.
Now, this hairbrush incident you alluded to earlier, you said was the first real incident of paranormal activity. Could you talk us through that?
Yes, I can. Because as I mentioned before, you know, things would kind of get lost and turn up someplace. This was entirely different. My older daughter was then about, I don't know, 2.5, 3 years old. We were going through a morning ritual in our bedroom, where she had long, thick hair, and I was trying to brush it out, and she was trying to get away. And the phone rang, and I had to turn to answer it, and she ran out the door of the bedroom, and I put the brush up on the mantle and talked to my friend about carpool or something, and then hung up, turned back to get the hairbrush, and it was gone. And I said, well, that's strange. I'm sure I put it there. And I started looking around for it while I called to Laura to come back so I could finish brushing her hair. Could not find that brush. Couldn't find it. Looked everywhere. And, you know, you know how you do with when you lose something, and you shake out the bedclothes and you look under the bed and around the bed and here and there, and you go back over the same territory again and again. But it was gone. It was just plain gone. And I had my husband look in the bedroom when he came home. I had the cleaning lady take a look. what's gone? And so I just bought another brush, and that was a mystery, but, you know, it was not one I really dwelled on until 6 months later when I had to, we have an antique, beautiful antique secretary desk that sits between the two windows in the bedroom, and I keep things like important papers, birth certificates, passports, that kind of thing in that desk. So it's hardly ever opened. But I needed to check a date on the passport. So I opened it up, and there, stuffed in a cubbyhole, was the hairbrush. And I froze for a moment. I just, you know, my mind just, as I say, my computer jammed. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, because that hairbrush didn't get there by itself. Someone put it there. And I knew I hadn't, and my daughter certainly hadn't, because she had run out the door on the other side of the room. How did it get there? And that's how this whole, that's when I started really paying attention to what was going on in the house.
So how do you start to wrap your head around that moment? And, you know, like you said, so many times the rationale kicks in and we're like, oh gosh, I must have picked it up, put it in a drawer, not even thought about it. Because we do go, let's face it, we do go about our day sometimes in a haze. And, you know, perfect example, you get in your car and head to work, and all of a sudden you're at work and you're like, how did I even get here? I don't even remember driving. It was just
right. I know. Right. And I'm inclined to that kind of activity as anyone else. But I knew that I did not put it there, because if I'd found the hairbrush, say, in a chest of drawers in the room, I would say, oh yeah, you reached in there to get something else and dropped it in. Or, I mean, I could have rationalized having done it myself. I knew that I didn't put it there, and I just was absolutely stunned, flabbergasted when I found it, and I could not fathom how it got there. And later, you know, I realized I there are things we just kind of don't pay attention that we sense, and I realized that I'd always had a sort of an awareness of something in the room early in the morning, and so I just started to try to think about the fact that there might be something, someone, a ghost living in our house, and it happened to be hanging out in the bedroom. So that's when I started really paying attention to things that went missing for a period of time, and I would watch and I would remember where I thought I'd left them and see where they turned up. And I began to notice that there were many instances when I would lose some object, an earring, you know, maybe a letter, or tended to be some small, ordinary object, and I couldn't find it for a few days, maybe a week or so, and then it would, all of a sudden, there it would be. And that's the kind of thing we all experience, but in this case, I realized that it wasn't just my absent mind. There was something else going on.
Now, was this happening? I know you didn't know it at the time necessarily, but now, was this happening to other members of the family?
As it turned out, it was, but they just weren't talking about it. I describe an incident in the book where I had kept this to myself because I knew my husband would think I was crazy, and I just said, I'm just going to watch and see how this develops. And then one day I couldn't find my keys, and I was really annoyed, and I said, my husband says, oh, well, where did you leave them? You know, that annoying response when you lose something.
Right.
And I said, I left them right here. And he says, well, why aren't they there now? And I said, well, because the ghost took them. And he just looked at me as I was afraid he would, like I had totally lost my mind. Later, however, when we had a young man living with us on the lower floor as a house sitter, he came up to the kitchen one evening, and the girls were there having their dinner, and he said, "Thank you for folding my laundry today." And I said, "Huh? What laundry?" He says, "Oh," he said, "I put some in the dryer this morning, and when I got home, it was all, you'd folded it all, it was all in neat stacks on the dryer." And I went down and looked, and yes, I had not been home all day. No one had been in the house all day. How did that laundry get folded? So when my husband came home and walked in, I had Keith repeat this story. And I said to my husband, "Now, do you believe there's a ghost living here?" And Don said, "Yeah. And I think in the morning it hangs around over by my side of the bed."
Wow.
So then, yeah.
Well, now, I got to know, I mean, how does that hit you when you've been kind of debating this and wondering about it, and all of a sudden you have confirmation from the guy you thought would think you're the biggest nut?
Well, that was pretty stunning. I was extremely surprised, but of course gratified as well. And then my daughters, who were, I don't know, what were they then? 7 and 4, 8, and they're 3 years apart, started telling stories about things that had happened to them up in their rooms. Noise at night, younger daughter had a hairband land in her bed after she'd gone to bed, and you know, just odd things happening. So then, you know, everybody acknowledged the ghost as being a part of our, population in our house, but they didn't pay attention in the same way I did. They still enjoyed treating it as a kind of joke. And that was until the workman was pushed on the stairs.
Well, what, you know, the kids that were experiencing the strange phenomena, were they ever seeing anything?
No, nobody saw anything in the way of a figure, an apparition. I mean, they saw the results. Elizabeth saw the hairband in her bed that she'd left on the, you know, when she turned on the light, she saw the hairband that she'd left on her dresser. But no one saw any figure.
The sense, though, that there was something there, they all shared that things would go missing. Would they hear voices or footsteps?
They would hear noises, bangings and, you know, knockings and, you know, just, you know, doors opening and closing kind of thing. We had a babysitter who lived with us for a period of time after Keith moved out, and she would go up and stay on the children's bedroom floor when we were not there, and I asked her if she'd ever noticed anything, and she says, "Oh, yeah, all the time." She says there was so much racket up there some nights it was hard to sleep, and I said, "Well, This is interesting. What happened while you were in the house?" And she said, "Well, I just, things would get moved around. I'd feel like there were people moving about, even though I couldn't see them. It was cold in some areas. And then we went on a trip to California, and when we got back, Elizabeth, the younger daughter, came and said, 'Mom, who moved my bed out from the wall?' And I went up to take a look, and she had a big old antique cast iron bed, and it had been moved out about 10, 12 inches from the wall. And I could see, you know, the imprints in the carpet where it had been. And no one had been there. And I said, 'My gosh, we've not, you know, we must have several ghosts because no one can move that by themselves.'" So that was a kind of visible thing that was apparent to all of us, that something very strange had happened up on that floor. But most of the time, it was noise.
From the creators of Cold Case Files and PD Stories comes the next great true crime podcast, I Survived. Every week, I Survived presents chilling first-person accounts from people who overcame deadly situations, allowing the survivors to describe the events as they unfolded and how they made it out alive. If you love true crime, you're going to love I Survived. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, PodcastOne.com, Apple Podcasts, and many other podcast apps so you can get new episodes every week.
The book is called The Hairbrush and the Shoe, A True Ghost Story. There's a link for it in today's program. You can go pre-order the book right now. As a matter of fact, we have it in our Amazon shop. What's our Amazon shop? That's a great question. Just go to darknessradio.com, click on our store tab. It'll take you in. There's two things on the store page. The first one is the link to our Amazon shop. Right below it, a link to buy my book. But click on the Amazon shop. You'll be able to go in and see paranormal books we feature on the show, true crime books we feature on True Crime Tuesday, and paranormal swag, some of the coolest clothes, toys, merchandise that has paranormal themes attached to it. So you can check that all out right at our site, darknessradio.com. Go order your cool paranormal books, swag, and more. And remember, when you buy these books, folks, don't just buy the books. Make sure that you rate and review them so that they do show up in the Amazon pages and more people get exposed to these. All right. Gene Stanton, our guest. Gene, you guys are hearing all these things. Things will go missing from time to time, then reappear in strange places. And now the whole family's in on it. Everybody is aware of the ghost or possibly ghosts in your house. The rest of the family is taking it very lightheartedly. Are you feeling any fear or trepidation about the fact that your house has this spiritual energy in it?
No, I'm not feeling fear, except for one episode that happened at night where I did actually see some kind of form pass by our bedroom door right after I turned out the light, and there was a shadow. That was kind of a creepy episode, but I didn't really become concerned until the pivotal incident, which was when the workman was pushed. We were in the process of renovating the bathroom outside our bedroom, which we'd not gotten around to, and it was a pretty dysfunctional bathroom, not having a tub or much of a sink, and it was very small and cramped. So we were doing some serious renovation, which we had not done at all in the house because it hadn't been necessary to knock down any walls or make any major changes. But we were really ripping up a lot of stuff with this bathroom. And my husband and I, when they started the demolition, my husband and I, took a break for the weekend and went out to a house we'd acquired outside Boston that we used as a weekend house. And we came back, and the workmen, these two guys, were waiting for us. It was about 4 o'clock, and it was past the time when they should have quit. And they said, we wanted to tell you what happened today. And apparently they were coming back from lunch, and they were going up the stairs to our bedroom. And all of a sudden, one of the men felt something whooshing by him, and then it pushed him really hard on his shoulder and hissed in his ear, and he stopped just stunned, and his colleague who was behind him looked and said, what's the matter, what happened, you're white as a sheet. And the guy, Dan, repeated his story. He said, something just really pushed me hard and hissed in my ear. They saw nothing. So he told us about this experience, and this was a very different kind of thing for the ghost or ghosts to have done, because there'd never been any physical contact, never anything that seemed malevolent. So after this, I started to think about it, and I said, I really need to know more about this. This is really a lot stranger than I realized. So I decided that I would find out exactly. I hadn't thought about what a ghost is or how they behave or anything. I decided I would try to find out if, in fact, we did have a ghost and what a ghost is and how it behaves. So I went and started doing some research, first online and then in the library. And that's when I started this project, and it became kind of a rabbit hole I fell into that turned out to be a best kind of rabbit hole.
Well, let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more to discuss. Our guest starts down the rabbit hole. Where does it take her? Stay tuned to find out. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. This is Darkness Radio.
Do you experience stress or have anxiety or even chronic pain or have trouble sleeping at least once a week? I know I do, and I know you're not alone. Many of us do. You know, personally, I think I've told you this many, many times in the last few weeks. I've got 13 herniated discs, neck, back, lower back, especially the lower back lately. The L5-S1 has been popping in and out like popcorn. It's not been good. But I've been dealing with my chronic pain in a most conventional way. That's with feels. Telling you feels has been helping me in the best way possible. It's been helping me alleviate that pain and helping me get to sleep. And I told you a little bit about anxiety with chronic pain the other week, and it's been helping with that anxiety as well. I was searching for anything that would help me, and I'm telling you, I discovered feels, and feels has been helping me with all those issues. You may be saying to yourself, what is feels? Well, feels is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. What does feels do? Well, feels naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. And I've got a lot of sleeplessness. I'll tell you, when you've got chronic pain, sometimes you can sleep for an hour, maybe 2 hours, and then you wake up, you've got chronic pain, you got to switch, maybe you got to get up, you got to walk around, maybe you got to wake up and take another pill. You and I both know what that's like. Well, with feels, feels helps you with that sleeplessness. It helps with that pain, helps with that stress, that anxiety that comes with chronic pain. Feels helps get you to that state where it eases that chronic pain, that underlying pain, not just the sharp pain you have, but that dull achiness, that sensation you have, that pain's about to ramp up. You know, that pain I'm talking about, the pain underneath the extreme pain. And the anxiety that comes with chronic pain, you know, that bracing, you know what I'm talking about, where you're tightened up, the muscles are tight, everything is tight, and you're just waiting, anticipating the fact that you're going to be in extreme pain. It gets rid of that anxiety as well. You may have regular anxiety. I say regular anxiety. There's nothing regular about anxiety, I know, Tim, but there's anxiety as well, and feels helps with that as well. Feels is very easy to take. You just place a few drops of feels under your tongue and you feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding the right dose is important and everyone's dose is different. So leave room to experiment over the course of a week or so. You may need to take more or less to get the effects you're after. Now, me personally, I'm a bigger guy. I am a little doughy around the midsection. That's true. So with me, I tend to need almost a full dropper of feels. And it's right up to that full line of feels. I take that, I put it under my tongue, and about 30 seconds, boom, the pain starts to slide away slowly. I feel the anxiety level come down a little bit. And you know what? I'm ready for bed. I'm just telling you right now, it's a nice feeling. Not that it makes you feel weird or anything like that. There's no effects to feels. There's none of that, you know, grogginess or anything like that that you get with the pills that they give you at the doctor. It's just that there's that nice easing of pain. There's that nice easing of the anxiety. So you start to feel normal again. You just want to naturally go take a nap. I never knew what it felt like just to feel normal again before I started feeling feels. So I just naturally want to go take a nap. If you have questions, there's real human support behind Feels. If you're new to CBD, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience, which is awesome. It's absolutely awesome because all of us have questions from time to time about Feels. You can feel better naturally with Feels. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high, no hangover, no addiction, none of that weird feeling on the way up or blah feeling or bad feeling on the way down. Because it's all natural and it helps you feel better naturally. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel at any time. It's extremely convenient to you. Although once you start feeling Feels, I don't know why you'd ever want to stop. It's amazing and it absolutely helps you on your journey to getting out of chronic pain, to your journey to getting out of anxiety. and reducing stress and sleeplessness. I don't know why you'd ever want to stop feeling Feels. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. You want to become a member today by going to Feels, that's FEALS.com/darkness, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. I don't think you can beat that anywhere. That's Feels, FEALS.com/darkness to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Get rid of pain. Get rid of stress. Get rid of anxiety. Get rid of sleeplessness today. It's real simple, folks. Go to Feels, FEALS.com/darkness. Become a member. Get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. That's Feels.com/darkness.
So, Gene, let me get this straight. Workers who have no idea that you have ghosts in the house are suddenly reporting strange instances and this hissing noise and being pushed. Do you think this is the ghost being protective of the area, or do you fear that this is amping up to maybe something a little bit more dangerous in your house?
As I interpreted it at the time, we were ripping up a bathroom that abutted a small dressing room that the former owner, a doctor, had used as his own, you know, kind of private space. And we were really making a mess out of it. But I mean, we were ripping out all his old, you know, cabinets and shelving and where he kept his stuff. And I figured at the time, and he was a very tall, athletic man, and Dan, the one who was pushed, a really tall guy, 6'5", and I thought, you know, I think it must be Dr. Kaner, and we've really annoyed him, and he's angry because we've interfered with his space, because we hadn't up until then really done anything intrusive to the house. We hadn't changed anything dramatically, so this seemed to me to be a logical explanation, as logical as one can be in these circumstances. But I've subsequently looked into a number of the previous inhabitants of the house and found that there were, you know, a lot of people in the house who were prospective candidates for ghosts.
Did that surprise you that you had that many candidates that could potentially be haunting your home?
It did. It mostly surprised me because of who those candidates were. And that was a really gratifying part of my research when I started looking into all the people who lived in our house. And I found some really remarkable people, most of them, all of them almost, doctors, several of whom were psychiatrists. But they were people. What really fascinated me was when I found out that we ended up sending our children to the same school as the most recent family. When we had, you know, many other choices, we found that we had been following in their footsteps without realizing it. Now, this again sounds fanciful. It only makes sense of any sort when you consider some of the other experiences we'd had with the house. But the more I looked into these people, the more I saw connections with our interest in art, with where we chose to go to church, with how we chose to deal with our children and where they went to school. There were just an awful lot of parallels. And then ultimately it was my daughter choosing the profession she has. So that kind of opened up to me a whole group of possible people. Now, as you study the difference between ghosts and spirits, ghosts tend to be the soul, you know, the spirit of people who chosen not to move on as the Ghostbusters, as a person like Edgar Bodine would put it. So I also had to assess who might have really been inclined to want to stay in the house after death.
Once you start to uncover these names, do you start calling out to these spirits that way? Do you try to address them specifically?
I did make a couple of attempts, and I don't seem to have any talent at all for that kind of communication, and it became very frustrating because I tried automatic writing after I'd been advised to do that by a psychic, sitting down in various rooms with a pad of paper and asking questions and hoping someone would direct me to write an answer. Never happened. So I got very frustrated with that and was not really able to come up with any what would pass for evidence of a particular person. I was also warned that if I tried to use something like a Ouija board, I could begin attracting spirits who hadn't lived in the house. This is a part of the whole process I found a little dubious, but I did avoid, we have a Ouija board in the house, but I've never used it because I didn't want to take a chance that someone, you know, hostile, unfriendly, malicious might be attracted.
Understood. And were you discussing your findings with your husband or anybody in your family?
Yes, I was. My daughters, for some reason, just weren't interested. I mean, they kind of liked talking about some of the things that they thought had happened, but they were not that interested. My husband became much more interested after Dan was pushed on the stairs. And I would tell him some of the things. But a lot of what I learned was not as interesting to them as it was to me, because I got into the really nitty-gritty of former inhabitants. I also got into a lot of information about such areas as spiritualism, telepathy, neurology. I dug very deeply into areas I felt were related to our situation, and I seem to be much more interested than anyone else in my family.
With the things that you were finding, was it surprising to you how much information you could acquire?
It was. Well, you know, the internet has been an absolute boon. I was rather timid at first, because I soon found out that when I told people I was doing research on ghosts, unless they were people who shared my interests, looked at me like I was nuts. And so I kind of kept my activity to myself until one night, you know, I was poking around on my laptop and looking for information, and I had learned that people like Arthur Conan Doyle, William James had been very interested in spiritualism, and I came up with the Ghost Club, which was an organization founded in Cambridge in the mid-19th century by a group of scholars and students who wanted to learn more about spirits and the possibility of communicating with same after death. This club was formed to do that kind of investigating. And I discovered when I started poking around and went to the website that the Ghost Club still exists. And not only that, but I could join for $50. I could sign up and be a member, which I did immediately. And that opened up a whole new source of really fascinating information about what's going on now in terms of investigation. And I even attended a couple of meetings in London.
Did you glean much information from those meetings into what you were dealing with?
Well, I found out, again, that it was a much more complex situation than I'd originally thought, because you get into things like telekinesis and poltergeists and what kind of experiences people have had, and also a lot of their programming and the articles are into skeptical kinds of subjects, such as how much does infrasound, which is I can't describe terribly well because I don't understand it, but it's a kind of vibrations in the atmosphere due to, I don't know, wiring or trucks going by or whatever, accounts for the kinds of feelings we may get that there's something in the room, a presence. There's that. And then there is other kinds of atmospheric conditions or mechanical conditions which can account for things we think we see, shadows, and such. So a lot of what I learned there was other ways, other things that could account for what we've been experiencing. It covered perhaps a little bit of what we'd been experiencing, but not everything. And there were also things I found very hard to comprehend, you know, the parallel universes, time travel, astral planes and such. Gets the whole paranormal world is a very multi-layered and complex place.
Now, with this research and what you're able to get from there, are they giving you any indication as to how to help get these spirits out of your home?
Well, yeah, there's the conventional methods that Ghostbusters use, in the Catholic Church that an Anglican Church that exorcists use, which involve prayer, or burning herbs, certain kinds of incantations. I really wasn't interested in getting rid of our ghost or ghosts. That wasn't an issue for me because they really weren't bothering us in any harmful way. I simply wanted to know what was going on, if in fact we had a ghost and how I could expect it to behave and who it might be. Those were my basic questions. As I read and learned more, the most interesting and obscure, confusing element in the whole paranormal world is that of the poltergeist, which is very poorly understood, and I can best describe it as some sort of energy that is either generated by a person or that's in the structure itself that can cause objects to move. The most dramatic instance was of a young girl in London whose house, sofas were flipping over and such. And there have been numerous examples of this kind of activity, many of which were contained in the archives at the Parapsychological, I can't ever say that word. Anyway, the Investigative Laboratory at Duke University.
Okay. Now, the haunting continued in your house. Does it still continue to this day?
It does. Actually, there was a long gap in any kind of discernible activity, and then we had the episode of the shoe. which happened in a small bedroom.
Well, now let me ask you something though, real quickly. So once you begin trying to make communication, you start researching it, it's almost as though it quiets down.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think that was the cause, if there was a cause. I think it was the fact that my daughters left for college, and that we were in the house a lot less. There really weren't any people around, and it was just my husband and me most of the time, and there just didn't seem to be any interest on the part of any ghost. I mean, I would sit down. I have a big table I often work at that's right at the bottom of the stairs on the main landing, and I would sit there and work sometimes, and I would hear things banging on the top floor, like doors were opening and shutting. But other than that, there really wasn't anything happening until my daughters started coming back with their husbands and my older daughter with her children.
So it's the they're almost the battery, the poltergeist agent in these instances then.
That's how I think it could be interpreted, because a lot of poltergeist activity occurs in situations where there are young adolescent girls. My daughters are no longer adolescent, but it did seem to be that they were an attraction for whatever ghost or remaining energy was in the house.
Was there one child that it seemed to be centered around more?
No, I wouldn't say that, because it was, I can't attribute more than a few incidents specifically to the girls, other than all of the kind of noises that the babysitter said, all of the stuff that she said would go on at night. And in fact, I went up and slept one night in my older daughter's bedroom just to see if anything would happen. And I just got so, there was so much noise up there just from ordinary things like, tree branches scraping the house outside and the chains rattling in the air shaft and such. I just kind of couldn't deal with that and quickly left. And the next visit I paid to her room, I paid in the broad daylight and tried to do some automatic writing. But I can't really attribute it to one child over the other.
In retrospect, who do you think specifically is haunting that house?
Well, I have chosen the original family consisted of a doctor, his wife, and three children, a son who became a very prominent psychiatrist and a colleague of Sigmund Freud, and two daughters. One daughter eventually married and moved out. The other daughter, Anna, never married. She was a spinster. She was an artist. She had artist friends. And she only moved out when her father, the doctor, died, and his wife and the spinster daughter, Anna, moved out to a house in the next block. So she had never really lived anyplace else her entire life, and had to leave the house when her father died. And I would posit that if any one of the people who lived in that building would not have wanted to leave and was unhappy about leaving, it would have been Anna. So she's my candidate. And I've tried to learn more about her. But because of the times, you go into the newspaper and look in the obituaries and you get all this information about the men and who they were and what they did and their professions and so on and so forth. The women who died in that area, she died, I would say, in 1918 or something, right around in there. She only gets date, age, date of death, age, and her name, and that was it. So I've had a very hard time trying to find out anything more about her.
When you make the communication, do you try still, or do you acknowledge the spirits of the house just to say, hey, hope you're having a good day, or how exactly do
I
you?
I do. And it's kind of a joke, but when we've been away for a while, I tend to come in the front, open the front door, and I say, hello, house. I do greet them. It's become a habit, and it makes me smile. I don't know if it makes them smile or not.
And does anybody else in the family still have any type of experiences?
No. The only definite experience we've had was the time the shoe, my grandson's shoe, disappeared and then reappeared. That's really been the only thing, that and just noises I hear. No one else has had anything that they've chosen to communicate anyway.
Aside from the workmen being pushed and that hissing noise, have there been any moments when anybody in your house, visitors, relatives, you know, people like that have, or maybe even yourself, where you felt frightened?
No. Friends of my daughters who've come to stay have felt frightened when told that there might be a ghost in the house. And I think that's just, you know, their imaginings. No one has been frightened. It has never been a scary kind of situation, which is why I've never been interested in having any kind of exorcism done.
Yeah, understandably, because again, if it's nothing evil and it's just one of the other former inhabitants, you certainly don't want to make them feel unwelcome in their own home as well.
No, you don't. And I think if it is one of these former inhabitants, they're not bothering us particularly. And if they're happy to be hanging about, that's fine with me. One of the early readings I did was a woman who does a lot of removal of ghosts from people's houses. And she warned, she said, don't make a pet out of your ghost. Well, I guess I have in a way. I don't mind having it around. I kind of like having it around, which is why I say hello house when I walk in. It's as long as no one's being hurt, nothing's being damaged, I don't have any problem with it.
What advice do you have for listeners that might be going through a basic haunting like this? Nothing standing out terrifying, nothing bizarre, but they're starting to notice that there are little things out of the ordinary.
Well, my first recommendation would be to keep a record. I was fortunate that I asked my daughter, my younger daughter, Elizabeth, when she was in high school, eighth grade, something like that, to write down everything she remembered, because I was trying to recall myself. And at this point, you know, I say, did that really happen? Am I remembering this correctly? And so on. So I would really recommend that people keep a list, keep a record of things that have happened that seem a little peculiar, and then try to find another explanation. I mean, this is pretty basic ghost-busting stuff, investigative stuff. You want to see if there's something else that could have caused your, you know, whatever, your letter to slip down behind the sofa or wherever it eventually turned up. Is there something else that accounts for that door-banging sound you hear from time to time? Is there anything else that could account for, I don't know, a peculiar smell? People, that's another thing that seems to happen. There can be mechanical reasons for that, and you have to eliminate those first.
That's great advice. I mean, simply, but how about in communicating or trying to speak with the spirits there?
Well, I was advised by a woman I think is a very competent psychic to do this automatic writing, and I tried it a couple of times. And I've used writing before, because I write, to try to just do kind of stream of consciousness writing to work through a problem or to express myself or to figure something out. So I was comfortable with doing that. And so I would go sit and with a pad and ask a question, speak to the whatever spirit was saying about, and wait for an answer, and nothing happened. And I'd move from room to room, and I tried that numerous times and never, ever got a response. My hand was never motivated to move in any kind of way that I could write out anything. So other ways of communicating would require a medium coming to the house. You know, people who can actually see and communicate through telepathy with spirits. And that's something I'd really like to do. I have not been able yet to find the appropriate person to do that. I've had a couple of dead ends insofar as getting a competent, reliable, of good reputation medium to come in and be there and see if they could perceive a spirit and communicate with them.
Very cool. Well, I'd like to know too, before we wrap up in today's book or today's interview about your book, when you, or if you ever came to the point you were going to sell this house, would you feel the need to disclose the otherworldly visitors or inhabitants?
Yes. I don't think anything's happened in our house that would scare people. And I don't think it's a deterrent. And I'd be happy to give them, as part of the deal, a copy or two of my book.
Well, we've got a link up to your book on our site. And what do you have a website people can visit as well?
Yes, I do. It's genestantonauthor.com.
All right. We will include that so that people can find it on today's episode as well. Gene, thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us. Fascinating. And I love that you're attitude was so open to the experience that you had. And instead of showing full fear, even in moments where you felt uneasy, you just dug deeper to try to understand what it was that you were dealing with.
Yes. Thank you for appreciating that. I think that's a good policy for all of us. Dig deeper.
Yeah. Dig deeper. Ask more questions. We appreciate it, Gene. Thank you so much. Thank you all for tuning in and being a part of the show. That's it for this week. We'll be back Tuesday with more of the best in True Crime Talk Radio. True Crime Tuesday, every Tuesday. You can find information about subscribing to that at darknessradio.com. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase